play a little bit this morning. Don't you feel it growing
day by day? Keep up, getting ready for the song's never going to get old.
No, it's a timeless. Mm-hmm. That's why I picked it. It took me a long time before this show started to come up with the right intro and outro. Mm-hmm. A long time. It was, but it quickly narrowed down to just a couple of really good ones, and this is one of it. What people need to make them smile, you know? Mm-hmm. Hey, it is, I'll get to that. But anyway, good music. Welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It is the Saturday before Thanksgiving. Never tuned in this show before. My name is Roger Metz, and
I'm Taylor Metz, if y'all didn't know.
She's my co-host and my daughter. It is the week before Thanksgiving, Saturday before Thanksgiving, so I think if you start fasting on, what, Tuesday?
You'll be good by Thursday.
You might can get by, maybe, without buying new clothes. I heard somebody told me that those stretch pants that women use when they're pregnant.
Yoga pants?
Not yoga pants.
Had the
elastic in the front.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. You know, somebody told me that that's a really good thing to have around during Thanksgiving.
Oh.
So.
Handy.
Handy. So, anyway, it's goodness gracious, with some of the restrictions that they want to put on Thanksgiving gatherings and families. And I know here in our family, we've got some challenges with Thanksgiving this year. But however you end up being able to celebrate Thanksgiving, celebrate it. Mm-hmm. Stop thinking about Christmas. Stop thinking about politics. Stop thinking about whatever else it is that, you know, occupies your time and celebrate Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. We're going to, at the end of the show, we're going to take a few minutes and talk about a few of the things that we're thankful for here. I know in past years, I think I've done Thanksgiving shows with my family. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I've had Jordan's been on here. My mom has been on here. Paul has been on here. You and I have done one. So it's going to be a little bit different because we're doing this show this week, and I'm hoping next Saturday to have a show finished up about the Harvest movie. Hmm. I thought Harvest, Thanksgiving would be a really good thing. So we're working on that. Jim Liberatore, the executive director of the Harvest movie, is supposed to get back to me, and we're supposed to the schedules are just crazy. So we're trying to get that done. If we don't do it done for Thanksgiving, we'll do it for Christmas. So, but it's a great idea, great movie. I think you'll enjoy hearing about it. And who knows who you might see in it.
Oh, I don't like that laugh.
I don't like the laugh either. Okay, so I missed this back a few weeks ago. And I'm sorry for those of you who don't like me just pulling rabbits out of hats. But try this on for size. Clear. Oh, sweet sound. Those aviation buffs who are out there. Oh, wrong slider. Check that out. There it goes up and there it goes down. For those aviation buffs out there, I missed it. October the 26th, 1940, was the prototype NA-73X first flight of the P-51 Mustang. And it's just one of my favorite. Always has been.
And you brought that to me, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's just an incredible, incredible airplane. And so, and really, if you talk to a lot of historians, they will say that the P-51 Mustang won World War II. Hmm. There's a bunch of them. There's actually a list of flying P-51s. They keep it updated. It's pretty cool.
As of today?
Yeah. I mean, they'll list all the P-51s that are, you know, that are in one piece or whether they're on display or flying or whatever else. So, but, you know, The XP-51, May 20th, 1941, 37 feet long, 37-foot wingspan, 32-foot long. It's 13 feet high at the horizontal horizontal stabilizer span is 13 feet, 8 foot 8 inches high. The original was a power plant, was a an Allison. They changed that to a Rolls-Royce Merlin in Britain and a Packard-built Merlin in the U.S. is a V-12. 425 miles per hour indicated. A big Hamilton standard four-blade prop out front, measuring 11 feet, 2 inches, and just one of my favorites. So just because I can, here you go. Oh, how sweet the music. And that's your, for whatever it's worth, part of the show today.
For whatever it's worth.
For whatever it's worth. But we do have a calendar of events. Brought to you by Visit Anderson.
Green Pond Landing Event Center.
I was going to wait on this, but you don't have much time. They had four classes. Three of them are already full, so you better grab one if you want one. The South Carolina Forestry Commission is offering a certified prescribed fire manager course. The only date available now is January 27th in Florence, South Carolina. The one-day course teaches managers how to plan prescribed burns that comply with South Carolina smoke management guidelines. These regulations are mandatory for all forestry, wildlife, and agricultural burning in South Carolina. It is not intended to teach individuals how to burn, but rather how to manage smoke from prescribed fires under these regulations and create awareness of legal issues associated with outdoor burning. This is a session begins at 8:30 and close at 5 o'clock, where you will have a test. Ugh. Don't like that word. It's a $50 registration fee, and get it in at South Carolina Forestry Commission website.
Got kind of a fun one here from Ugly State. They're putting on a world's largest Santa Claus bass tournament benefiting Toys for Tots. It is Saturday, December 12th. Lake Norman, North Carolina, Queens Landing.
Just a little bit north of where we are.
Just a little bit north.
It's okay.
North.
For good cause.
For a very good cause. You should take advantage of this. First place is $5,000. Entry fee is $100 per team. But the catch is they will provide a Santa Claus costume for you. Got to wear all tournament. But there's some fun things. You got raffle prizes and awards for best Santa. So go check it out. You need to look into that one. I'm kind of wanting to do that. Like,
all right, go ahead and do yours.
We got Coastal Expeditions is putting on their 24th annual used kayak and canoe and gear sale Saturday, December 5th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. That's kind of a short one.
That's a short one. Okay, 2020 Redfish Spots Tournament. It's an online-based redfish spot tournament. Will begin December 1st at midnight and end December 20th at midnight. Registration begins, November 15th, so we're already in that registration block, via the johnyacht.com, which is the website, THEJONYACHT.com. Event registration, $15. If you want a shirt, it's $40. Facebook Live on November 30th at 6 p.m. to go over the rules below. Sportsmanship, you know, got to meet everything there. Goes over permitted fishing locations, methods, eligibility, all DNR registered. I got it under control. Mm-hmm. This is a capture and photo tournament. Most spot scoring, all natural black spots and specs will be scored. Unique barcodes, everything. So anyway, check it out, the John Yacht 2020 Redfish Spots Tournament. Hang on, we'll be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side.
No, no, in case you didn't know. I've heard those city singers.
You like this song.
Yeah, this one's okay.
Deeper than the oceans, higher than the
For those of you looking for the normal bumper music, we agreed that Taylor would be able to pick the bumper music for the month of November. But I heard that, and I'm a man of my word.
No matter how much you regret it.
No matter how much pain I endure doing it, I'm still there. Welcome back to Woods and Water South. I love Gene Hill, and I decided this show, I'm going to open up every segment with a Gene Hill quote.
Hmm.
Gene Hill is one of my favorite authors. He writes books, a lot to do with dogs, bird hunting, a listening walk, a hunter's fireside book, a lot of it. He's one of my favorite authors. But anyway, I thought this was appropriate. What will we take from November? To some of us, the pheasants will seem smarter, the quail and grass faster, the ducks a little higher than we remember. It's not important that we do especially well. It is important only that we went.
Mm. That's a good quote.
Great quote. Thank you very much.
You haven't read a book in forever.
I used
to read all of them books.
I used to read so much, and it's just time has gotten away from me. And I hate to admit this, but sitting down to read is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because my attention span, I'm used to just having to jump from one thing to the next, to the boom, to the la la la. It's like sticking holes and fingers in dykes holes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it bothers me. I've got some great books. I've got great books in plastic that I haven't gotten to read yet.
It's pretty sad.
It is pretty sad. It is pretty sad. I have books down there. The only reason they're open is because they were signed by the author.
Mm.
And I haven't read them yet. So, shame on me. And I do have two authors are going to be on with us in December.
Huh.
Rob Simbeck has got a new book out about, I can't remember the name of it. I got it downstairs on my desk. About naturalists. It's a naturalist book, but it's heavily towards the southeast, South Carolina. So he reached out to me. We're going to get him on. And then Kevin Lovegreen, I'm going to try to get, we talked earlier about coming back on. Kevin writes outdoor books for kids. And I thought here at Christmas time, be a good time to talk about books.
Books. Everybody
maybe,
loves books.
Maybe y'all will do a better job than I have about reading them when you get them.
I don't know. Depends.
Depends.
Okay. I've got kind of an interesting article here.
Yes.
And actually, I don't think you knew this about South Carolina's coral reefs. We don't have any. Can you believe that?
Why not?
Waters are too temperate.
And that means what?
You tell me.
Okay.
It's too temperate. What does that mean, Dad?
I don't know.
You don't even know.
I am not a walking dictionary today. What does temperate mean, Taylor?
Too warm?
Okay. All right.
Maybe?
Well, tell us about it.
So.
It's your article. You're trying to trap me.
You trap me all the time.
I do.
Yes. Anyway, DNR put out this article on the new artificial reefs in Georgetown, South Carolina.
Okay.
And yeah, when I pulled out this article, I was like, what are artificial reefs? When I think artificial, I'm like, plastic? But we try to keep plastic out of the oceans, don't we?
Yes, we try to.
But artificial reefs in Georgetown are made up of barges, 20 army vehicles, and trawlers and everything, and 50 feet of water. And I'm like, okay, so why? Why artificial reefs? How do we get a benefit out of that? And in this article it says, artificial reefs play a similar role in the ocean as coral reefs, but they cannot grow in our South Carolina waters. But these human-built structures are placed in areas of the seafloor with natural, with little natural relief, improving habitat and spawning grounds. And that is something I want to hear somebody talk about it, because this article is pretty short and I want to get more information about it.
Well, Tom Mulliken, our friend from Camden,
mm-hmm.
is working with a project called the Smart Reef Program.
Mm-hmm.
And folks, she picks a lot of her stuff on her own and researches it. I don't know what she's doing from one week to the next other than before the show. She goes, here's what I got.
It's always a surprise.
Yeah. And she reaches her stuff. So we don't collaborate on a lot of this stuff, but it's interesting that you say that, because Tom Mulliken, one of his things is called the Smart Reef Program
mm-hmm.
through South Carolina. and I'll see Tom soon, and we're going to talk about doing a couple of segments on some of the things he's got going on. One of them is the Smart Reef Program. So we will get more information on that. You ask, I deliver.
Thank you for delivering.
You're welcome.
But did you know they've been doing this for over 40 years?
Yeah, I do know. We have a long history of building artificial reefs in South Carolina. It's not off the coast of Georgetown. I mean, they're probably close to, I don't know, 50 or 60 artificial reefs, ranging from, near shore reefs at 2 to 3 miles out to, I don't think we go much further out past than the shelf, which is, 80 feet of water, 100 feet of water? I'm not positive on that. But, I mean, and they use all sorts of stuff. I mean, Coastal Conservation Alliance is a big partner in these reef systems.
The latest addition to it was funded by Sea Hunt Boats Company and Coastal Conservation Association.
And they, they kind of, they'll take, Sophie's over there dreaming. I hear barking. I see her twitching. They'll use old boats, army vehicles that are,
Subway cars is
another one. And you do get some growth on those things. I don't know if it's coral growth or what kind of growth, but you do get some growth on those after they've been underwater for a while. And it is a huge fish attractor. I mean, those GPS coordinates are well known among the offshore guys.
Right. And this is, it draws a lot of attention from divers too.
Yeah, divers too, because where you draw fish, you draw people. Whether you're fishing or whether you're down there looking at, diving and all.
I kind of like to go see them.
Sharks bother me. Anyway.
You have a problem with sharks, don't you, Dad?
I do. I was harmed at an early age by the movie Jaws. It's just impressionable. Okay, I've held off on this one. This actually came back in September, but I've held off on it because I know, a lot of people up front during deer season, they're filling their own freezer, so to speak. And that's what we do. But there is an organization here in South Carolina. It's a 501c3. It is a not-for-profit organization, and it's called South Carolina Hunters and Landowners for the Hungry. And this is actually written by Dwayne Swigert, who's a member of the Department of Natural Resources Board. He writes about it, and it's the members of South Carolina Hunters and Landowners for the Hungry work to provide nutritious venison legally and ethically harvested by hunters to residents of South Carolina in need. According to feedamerica.org, 1 in every 8 South Carolinians struggles with hunger. So South Carolina stepped up, and in 2004, Sophie Hush.
Wake up.
There. Okay.
Continue.
Y'all probably don't hear this, but it's very annoying in the background to have your dog snoring and then yipping. Whatever. So they were established in 2004 by a group of civic-minded deer hunters in the upstate of South Carolina who wanted to share their harvest with those that needed meat but were unable to hunt and deprocess deer for themselves. Their website, schuntersforthehungry.com. They've distributed more than 500,000 pounds of donated venison via a network of processors and a diverse group of partnering organizations that includes church ministries, soup kitchens, food banks, and other community resource groups. And the processors are a key point here because they donate their services to process, to take the deer from when the hunter drops it off to having it packaged and ready to go to some of these places. System works out great. If any hunter can donate all or part of it, and the reason I bring this up is because later in the season, after you've filled your freezer and you've gotten your nice buck or whatever, a lot of people will do herd management. We're gonna do one later in December. Somebody wants 16 deer taken off, so we're gonna work with them and help them. And that's why I brought it up now, because if you're in that process and that part of the season, your deer season, where you are looking to thin down a herd, and you don't necessarily need it for yourself, you've already given some to the people you know. This is another avenue for you to donate.
Right.
A volunteer will pick up the processed venison and deliver it to a local agency feeding people across the state, and the organization will reimburse the processor part of their cost. So, pretty good program if you're interested in it. It is schuntersforthehungry.com.
What you got?
What have I got? I was sitting
all
here
mine
looking.
All mine are going to take the third side.
Forever.
We got some good articles coming from me.
Okay, here's a good one. All right, this is gonna require you people to think and remember.
Gracious.
Are you ready?
You're gonna make us think on a Saturday.
On a Saturday, okay. You ready? You are stranded on a deserted island. You can choose four of the following. You ready? You're stranded on a deserted island. You can choose four of the following: a tarp, hiking boots, insect repellent, water purifier, first aid kit, tent, fishing rod, hammock,
handsaw,
sunscreen. I don't know if we could take toilet paper off the list because it's in, I understand it's being a run on toilet paper in the grocery stores again, but toilet paper, a flare gun, a compass, rope, a knife, matches, hunting rifle, mirror, inflatable raft, a pot, an iPod, a flashlight, vitamins, a volleyball named Wilson, or 5 ounces of weed.
Those last two kind of go together.
They do, don't they? you have some people pick those two and like the hammock and
they're just living
toilet
life.
Paper.
They're
That's
just
right.
living
they're
life.
Just, they're just living life.
Flare gun, number one. You can have all that stuff, but how are you going to get off the island?
Well, flare gun or mirror. Both do the same thing. Plus, the mirror you can use to start a fire. Well, magnifying glass starts fires. Maybe not a mirror.
That's
so,
not
okay.
a list.
So, I know. Okay, so you got a flare gun and a mirror. Oh, I did miss that, didn't I? Oh, well.
It's
I got
Saturday.
Involved.
Yeah, I could tell.
Okay, so water purification is probably a big one.
Yeah.
Although your body will adjust, so we'll leave that one off. You probably don't have the risk of beaver fever. You laugh. That is a real thing on a deserted island. The fishing rod would be nice. The first aid kit would be nice. The flare gun, first aid kit, fishing rod. I might take Wilson.
Not the 5 ounces of weed.
No. It wouldn't do me any good. Y'all hang up. More Woods and Water on the other side.
A 40 HP Johnson on a flat bottom metal boat. Coke cans and BB guns, barbed wire and old fence posts. 8-point bucks in autumn. In freshly cut cornfields, one arm out the window, and one hand on the wheel. Some things just go better together.
That's not a bad one either. That's not a bad one either.
Are you falling for my music?
No, I didn't say that at all.
I think you are. I think you are. I think you're becoming a softy.
I'm not.
I think you are.
Okay.
I think you are.
Gene Hill quote for this segment. It's hard to pick. I'm sorry. I'm sitting here looking. I think that one's in, but that one, though. You know?
He's very indecisive.
As a kid growing up, This one just kind of takes me back. Because I've hunted a lot in the rain. I love being outdoors in the rain. I have since I was a kid. Probably before I started hunting. I just enjoy being in the woods during a rain. And hunting was an excuse to be out in the woods in a rain and not have mom jump on me because I was just being dumb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've hunted together before and we've hunted together since. But the talk always takes on a softer, special tone whenever one of us starts a sentence. Remember that day in the rain. Gene Hill for today.
Gene Hill for the segment.
For the segment. I got one more to go. There. And I got to decide which one to do.
You do.
I think I
Quit
got.
Being so indecisive.
I think I got a perfect one. Okay.
So many of y'all may have seen, if you follow QDMA, Quality Deer Management Association, or National Deer Alliance, they have merged.
Yep.
And created a new name, a new logo.
Yeah, the logo. Yeah. Okay.
Well, the logo's kind of.
Yeah.
The same,
okay. Go ahead.
But all around a new vision by combining both their strong suits into one, which they now call National Deer Alliance. That's a big step. And yeah, I'm excited QDMA to see where it goes.
QDMA was formed back in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
Right here in Greenville. Joe Hamilton was behind QDMA. And the National Deer Alliance was formed probably back around 2016, 2017, something like that. You were actually with me in Kentucky.
I was.
That was the first National Deer Alliance national meeting was in Kentucky, and that would have been like 2016.
That was my second national tournament.
You were shooting NASP? Yeah. And yeah. You actually went up with me, and then mom came up later, or did mom come up and then go home? Or
mom came up, and I stayed with you, and she
That's right.
Home.
That's right. And we went. I was at that. That's where I met Steve Ranella for the first time. So what else is a – tell us about it.
It really doesn't give much information on it as of right now. It is just – this article is mainly focusing on how they are forming this new thing and what made them – decided. So their both of their goals is just conserve deer hunting and the way it's brought about. And it's honestly a very important thing these days because not many people think about what it takes to keep up this sport and what it means to really put your heart and soul into it. And these people put their heart and soul into it. And yep. You know that better than anybody. You worked alongside QDMA for how many years now?
Well, a few.
A few. Just a few. And what are your thoughts on this before we move any further?
My thoughts on this. I mean, I think you had two organizations. Okay. Part of this has probably been brought about by COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I think the idea of combining them started before this. I think this probably pushed it into, you know, actually taking the steps to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the National Deer Alliance was formed, and a lot of the first conference was on CWD and
I remember that.
You know, funding methods or how do we combat it. You know, there's a lot of replication across state agencies for CWD, and I think National Deer Alliance was formed really to try to figure out how to, on a national level, how to manage that. And there is a bunch of federal funding for CWD research now.
I think we did a segment on CWD one time, didn't we?
Oh, we've done several. That's yeah, with Grant Woods and others.
Because it really blew up. What was it last year?
Well, it's been there. It seems like it comes around for discussion every deer season. It seems like it's silent during the spring and summer, and then during deer season, it's a hot topic subject again. And I have avoided it this year. Simply because it is out there. I have not seen any new cases spring up any closer to South Carolina than Tennessee, which is, you know, that far western, southwestern corner of Tennessee has it.
I feel like it's a really big thing with
Alabama.
You know, when these, you know, one that come from or go to Texas and out west, and it's a really big thing when it comes to moving the meat and what you take back with
you. That's right. Most states, including South Carolina, have restrictions on what you can bring back from out of state.
You can't bring anything back with the
spinal column.
Yeah, spinal column.
Yep. And what you don't realize, folks, is that when you leave Colorado with a mule deer or an elk and you're transporting back to South Carolina, you break every state law in between there and here because most every state between here and there has the same laws that we do about transporting. So it's not just you break South Carolina laws. If you do that, you're breaking laws on every state.
You come through. Yeah.
I do like the fact that they're combining. I think it gives them the grassroots strength that National Deer Alliance probably did not have, that they get through Quality Deer Management Association. And when you say Quality Deer Management Association, I know we've said it here on the show before, our guests have said it, it's not about growing big deer.
No, it's not.
Well, what's it about?
It's about serving the hunters and the deer we have.
Well, it's quality deer management. It's the health of the deer herd, the health of the
hunting.
Yeah, okay. I worded it a little differently. You know, I can remember being in some of those early meetings. I think the logo was yellow deer on a green background. Those were the stickers. They were round.
And the logo, the history behind the logo is Joe Hamilton actually hand sketched it, and it's a buck and a doe, and that symbolizes the importance of both.
Yep.
And they kept that, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that is one thing I'm very happy with them about. The name changed, so you got National Deer Alliance was one, then you had Quality Deer Management Association. It is now what?
It is now the, the National Deer Association.
Association.
You said association before.
Yeah, and they've kept the doe and the buck logo, which is I think is really cool.
And that logo was from 1988.
1988.
When it was founded. And I feel like
if you've been around Greenville for a long time, we used to meet. I'm almost positive it was a Western Sizzlin' Steakhouse across from Kmart on Wade Hampton, near Wade Hampton High School. I think that was a Western Sizzlin', if I'm not mistaken.
It's not there anymore, is it?
Oh, no. It was a gosh, it's been so many things. Chinese buffet, you know, it's. But I believe it was a Western Sizzlin' Steakhouse is where we used to have those first meetings. And this is where it really gets funny.
Oh, my word.
Grant Woods was doing his research and studies at Clemson back then. And I remember Grant doing some of his presentations for his doctorate or whatever at Clemson. And I saw Grant many times since, but one time we were talking about how old we were. And I said, yeah, I said, I can remember you putting up overhead projection stuff, or maybe it may have been on a slide or something, but it was typed, and you won't know what typing looks like on a typewriter where the lines aren't, you know, the lines across the page don't match and everything like that. That's how far that goes back. So,
I think this is going to be interesting to see how this grows.
It will be. But Quality Deer Management Association, National Deer Alliance, the driving behind that is a healthy deer herd and a healthy hunting environment.
Right. And keeping the heart.
And one of the biggest things they've done is the Field to Fork program. Hmm. You know, Hank Forrester, who's been on the show before, has been instrumental. He and, the guy from Georgia. He's got one of the deepest voices. Oh, I can't remember his name.
I can't remember his name.
No, but he works with Georgia Wildlife. But they have done the Field to Fork program. And the Field to Fork program is where they essentially take people who have never hunted. Mm-hmm. You introduce them to hunting, you know, through classroom instructions. You have meetings where you fix venison, and you talk about hunting, and then you practice, you know, you like the TOMO program that Pam was talking about for women. It's kind of like that, you know, you introduce them to it. You get a group of people who mutually support each other. You mentor them. You take them on a hunt. Most of their hunts are archery hunts on land that they have asked landowners to let them use. And then they harvest an animal, they clean it, and they all have a big dinner. It's called the Field to Fork program. So, I think it'll be interesting to see how it is going forward.
Yeah, and I think you know, two is always better than one. So
absolutely.
We'll see.
All right, y'all hang on. We'll be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side. This is where the 5 ounces of weed comes in.
Dad! Slap you upside the head in a second.
Used to spend my nights out.
I'm done. Have fun in the 4 second by yourself. 5 ounces of weed, huh?
I did not overrule any of your musical choices to date.
It's Chris Stapleton. You cannot go wrong.
That song puts me to sleep.
If you fall asleep that fast,
well,
that's something to be concerned about.
But I'm not worried about me so much. I'm worried about our listeners falling asleep at the wheel as they drive down 385.
Please.
It's going to Columbia.
Please.
I mean,
what are you doing? No.
I was going to play some good music to wake everybody back up again.
Dad. This is why
I'll refrain.
It's amazing that we have made it through so many years of this show.
You know, I happen to pull out. Oh, there's that good one by Darius Rucker. No. He's come out with like three or four. He's got a new Christmas song out. Mm. We'll have to delve into that one come next month. Yes, it is amazing because in the fall of 2018 is when you decided you wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are in 2020. You worked into it, but yeah, okay.
I worked into it. You take some getting used to.
I do. I admit that. I'm not the easiest person to.
Imagine working with your dad.
I worked with my dad. And he gave me very little leverage, very little leeway like I give you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with my dad towing a 200-foot steel tape through the woods surveying during the summer times. You have little to complain about.
That's tough.
Gene Hill quote for this one. I think this is. It is probably one of the shortest quotes, but it is probably, especially at this time of the year, Thanksgiving, most appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in our competitive world.
Yep.
Our greatest trophies are not things, but times. So.
That's a really good quote.
That is a really good quote. He doesn't have any bad quotes.
That's
he doesn't have any bad books. You know, like Boston. I love Boston, the music group. But they have a bad song. And it wasn't a song they wrote. It was one the recording company said, you need to, we wrote this song. You need to play it on your album. And let me take you home tonight. It's like every other song that Boston wrote up through like Corporate America album. After that, I kind of lost. They got too political. But the first four albums, I guess, you know, it's only one song. Gene Hill, I have yet to find a book or a story or whatever by Gene Hill that I don't like. So
that quote, I feel it needs to be enforced a little more and out there a little more because we talk about it. I mean, it takes place in anything, deer hunting, you know, fishing, hiking, running.
Yeah.
That it's everywhere. And I feel like sometimes we just need to take a step back and be like, at least I'm out here doing this. You know, I may not be harvesting that buck that I wanted to or catching that 6-pounder off Hartwell or something like that. You're out there and you're making memories. And that's important.
That's right.
Go ahead.
You were healthier for being out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to get some Thanksgiving things. So here we go. Okay. Digital. It's hard. Chasing an explanation for the South's odd rut or digital overload. Average adult will spend 34 years of their lives staring at screens. or oyster recycling. Or... don't make these rookie deer hunting mistakes or the ride home. Should you show your deer covered up or after the shot, take these days. It's just never ending. And I never get to this stuff. Deer movement is a mystery. Stop trying to solve it. And you've got other stuff over there that you got. Why don't you go ahead?
Me?
Yeah, go ahead. Well, I'll go. Never mind.
I can go. Do you want to decide something?
Well, we need to do something. We need to talk about Thanksgiving for a few minutes too. Okay. Any, many, and I know how that works out, so that's not fair either. Rock, paper, scissors?
Sure. Rock, paper.
Oh, tied. Tied again.
What are we doing? Okay, you
paper
got
paper covers rock. So we tied twice, and I won the third one, so I'll go.
This is how we
and
do
then we'll
show.
Talk about. Then we'll talk about Thanksgiving. See, you lose. You don't get to do any more of your stuff. Yeah, because we won't have any time.
That's fine.
And you're wasting time arguing with me, so hush.
This will take some time. Yeah.
Okay.
Digital overload. You're the one who's indecisive.
Average adult will spend 34 years of their lives staring at screens.
I believe that.
New York, think you spend a lot of time staring at your computer screen? A new survey may surprise even the most screen-addicted tech user. Researchers say over the span of one's lives, the average adult will spend not months, not years, but decades gazing at their digital devices. Now, granted, this takes into account work, but a poll of 2,000 British adults, I don't know why these studies come out of Britain all the time. They never do stuff over here, but commissioned by Vision Direct found that the typical person will spend a staggering 34 years looking at phones, computers, or televisions. During the typical adult lifespan from ages 18 to 81, researchers say a person will be glued to their screens for over 13 hours a day. That adds up to 4,866 hours each year and a stunning 301,733 hours throughout those 62 adult years. And that starts at 18. Mm-hmm. You imagine how much screen time kids spend now days, where you just hand them an iPad and it's a babysitter.
Or Xbox or...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good for communication, bad for the eyes. Over half the respondents admitted their screen time strained their eyes, but 4 out of 10 said they rarely stopped to rest their vision. Another 12% of the survey said they never take a break. Goodness gracious alive. PC time overtakes TV time. Researchers say adults are spending most of their screen time planted in front of a computer. Just over 4 hours a day are spent looking at a laptop, while 3.5 hours are devoted to television each day. Sometimes we do both here, but I'm usually working on one while I'm watching, while the other's on for background noise. No one wants to say take a break. Mm-hmm. Although the poll says we spend more than 13 hours a day in front of a screen, respondents believe less than half of that time is used productively. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. For parents, 4 in 10 say their kids spend too much time on their devices too, but despite being in charge, 2/3 of those parents said they feel like hypocrites telling their children to turn off the screens. Don't you say a word.
I'm not saying a
Thank
word.
Thank you. There are positives and negatives with screen time, and as long as people are mindful of when to limit use, there doesn't need to be any long-term damage. 2020 rule. The rule advises you take a break every 20 minutes, look away for 20 seconds, and turn your attention to something at least 20 feet away. Interesting.
There's an article that I have coming for y'all soon, but I was marking it up yesterday, and it said something about, you know, parents need, the parents that are out in this, you know, hunting or fishing or conservation world, it is hard, I'm sure, for them to say something because they are working as well. And I feel like this pandemic has drawn a lot of people to the screens. But I feel like what they need to realize is, the quote from this article was, these kids that we're bringing up right now is the next generation of hunters and conservationists and fishermen and everything. And if we don't tell them how important it is to have a connection with nature and the outdoors, you're not going to have another generation. You're always going to have wildlife biologists, stuff like that, but they're going to start carrying their love of the outdoors in their briefcase and not in their hearts. And that's a whole different relationship. And I feel like that's a really important message that needs to get out there, is that we are grooming the next generation, and we want to make sure we have the opportunity to be able to have the next generation of hunters and anglers. And if we don't, we don't have what we have today. And I feel like that's going to be more and more important as time goes on, because it's going to, people are going to try and take it away from us, and we can't let that happen.
We had part of this discussion last week when we went to Cade's Cove.
We did.
You know, you get out there and you want to be the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Got the entrance to Cade's Cove. There's 30 cars ahead of us and 20 cars behind us, and I'm fuming already because I want to be the only one out there. I don't want anybody else getting in the way or, you know, whatever. And I have to step back going, look, these people are out here. This is a good thing they're out there. Mm-hmm. If people are not invested in the outdoors when it's gone, or when the time comes to choose outdoors or no outdoors, if people haven't been invested and aren't out there, then there is no choice, because they don't even know what the outdoors is.
Right.
Which kind of chimes with what you said. Mm-hmm. Okay, we got time for maybe one thing from you and one thing from me on. So go ahead. Thanksgiving, it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. I have my own meaning. I'm sure you have your own. Mom's got her own. Everybody's got Thanksgiving. I'm a glass half full guy. Always try to be. Doesn't always work. What do you got?
Well, number one for me that's been shown to me throughout this year has been family. I'm really thankful for family and the support. And, you know, no matter how much we butt heads, family is always number one. And it should always become number one. Poor mom. She has to deal with this every day. Yeah. Oh, she's an angel. But you always got to, I mean, no matter what takes the back seat in everyday life, it should never be family, because they're always there when you need them. And it's one of the most important things to me, because without family, you don't have anything.
We are blessed with lots of good family.
And close, too.
That's true. Glass half full, you know, yes, COVID has wrecked 2020.
Gracious.
I mean, absolutely wrecked it.
Chewed it up, spit it out.
But, you know, there are upsides to everything. I've had several conversations, and it's amazing when I bring it up because it spurs another conversation. Yes, a lot of lockdowns, a lot of people staying home, a lot of people working remotely and all. Mm-hmm. And Micah is a perfect example of this. You know, Michael and Lauren, my niece and her husband, we have a grandchild in our family now, our great-grandchild. Yeah, Micah. And with his work being shut down in Minneapolis, he's been home mm-hmm. for months. So, and I know in a lot of families where you've been working from home and working remotely, especially now when we're used to it because we homeschool. So mm-hmm. we're used to being around each other. And I know it's an adjustment for a lot of other families to have home. But especially with families with young children, mm-hmm. the time they've been able to spend together.
Right.
It's just been irreplaceable. So anyway, you got one more?
Friends. Friends is a very important thing because it's always family first, friends second. And I'm thankful for the friends I've had this summer throughout, you know, Austin's accident. And I'm sure he's thankful for his friends too. That's where a lot of support comes in. If you don't get it from your family, you get it from your friends.
Real quick, Austin's coming home.
He's coming home the 24th.
Amazing.
So excited.
Amazing. The recovery. He's still got ways to go.
He does.
But to be able to come home for Thanksgiving, and he actually had a video of him walking
the other day. With a walker. Absolutely incredible.
From being paralyzed to a walker. So anyway, however you celebrate Thanksgiving, with whomever you celebrate it with, be thankful. As always, make time to get out there.
Take the back roads when you can.
Don't forget the camera. We'll see you back here with more Woods and Water South Carolina next Saturday.
From behind, yes, I'm gone.